Hello. Today we have a very special guest, Cindy McCaffrey. When her husband John was diagnosed with neurocognitive brain disease at age 48, Cindy co-founded UQuest, a charity that operates a wellness day program for Calgarians under the age of 65 living with dementia. The service provides socialization and stimulating activities for the participants, as well as respite and support for the care partners. Cindy and John both hail from Calgary and enjoy spending time with their two adult children, going on surprise adventures, and volunteering with UQuest. Cindy, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you. Cindy, can you talk a little bit about what your journey's been like with your husband's diagnosis of young onset dementia?
Certainly. It started in 2007, and I'll never forget the day he came home from work and he said, "I cannot figure it out." And he was referring to how he was getting his clients mixed up at the office. He wasn't learning new software very well. And his martial arts teacher actually told him that he was doing the sequencing wrong, where he was supposed to be punching instead of kicking, and everything was kind of in a downward spiral. So after months of testing, we found out that the front and side lobes of John's brain are degenerating. So he has what's called frontal temporal dementia. And at the time of the diagnosis, we were shocked, but we weren't really surprised because his dad had young onset Alzheimer's. And we don't know that they're connected, but we do know that young onset dementia is a thing. Mm-hmm. So John and I decided quite early on to simplify our lives and to move into a smaller house and to be upfront with the kids. They were 12 and 17 at the time, and try as hard as we could to have a normal life. And early on, John said he would just try to have a good day every day, because he knew what happened to his mother, being the care partner. 30 years ago, the stigma of dementia was even worse than it is now. Mm. So, and she did not want to go to support groups, and there were no support groups for her husband, and he had been very active. He was quite an athlete. So she took on all the stress of trying to keep him engaged and seeing his life disappear because his friends and family left. So John said, "Well, we're not going to have that happen to Cindy." So he's been very cognizant of keeping care partners strong and resilient. We did try to find a place for John to stay engaged during the day while mm-hmm. I was at the office, and it was impossible. Most of the places were over 65. The participants had to be over 65. And the other options were just kind of sedentary day programs, and he wanted to get out and move. And around the same time, I was in a care partner support group for people with young onset dementia. And one mm-hmm. of the gentlemen there told a terrible story about how his wife had to be placed in supportive care because he was working all day and she couldn't be at home alone. She had originally been very active, hiking and walking, and loved gardening and being with friends. So when mm-hmm. she was placed, she was agitated and anxious and depressed and angry. She wanted to get out, and she banged on the doors and windows just to get out. So they hauled her off to the hospital, restrained her in a bed, drugged her to the point where she couldn't even speak her husband's name. And the husband told us at our support group, he said, "If only someone had taken her outside for a walk, that could have relieved her anxiety and depression." Mm-hmm. So then I thought, well, you know, we really need to do something better for these younger people with dementia, because they are active. And a friend of mine and I co-founded this charity, and we held focus groups, and we asked potential participants, "What would you like to see in a day program?" And they said, "I want to do things that I used to do. I want to play basketball, and, mm-hmm. and I want to be in the community. I don't want to be in the basement of a community hall." And the care partners said, "Well, I need a full day respite, because I go to the office at 9 a.m. and I can't leave at 2 to come pick him up." Mm-hmm. So we worked with recreation therapists. And by the way, I think it's Recreation Therapy Month.
Yes,
and
it is.
Yes, and oh, we have the best rec therapists. So we worked with rec therapists and designed a really wonderful active wellness day program. And we decided we're going to give our participants choice, because often people with dementia don't get choice. So if you don't like basketball, let's try pickleball. And one thing I thought was interesting is they're not really into yoga and meditation. I was so surprised. At least this cohort isn't. Mm-hmm. So it's been a wonderful growing journey, learning about how to best support the families and how mm-hmm. to get the best staff. And then, of course, how to fund it all. Mm-hmm. And we have grown to 2.5 days a week. And the half day is specifically for people who find the full day just too much for them, either cognitively or physically. And we're based out of the Jewish Community Center in Calgary, and they have a beautiful facility. So we started in the morning with our coffee time and a muffin to get caught up. Mm-hmm. And then it's down to the fitness area for a workout. And then afterwards, they could go into the gym for pickleball or basketball. Mm-hmm. And then another important part of the day is breaking bread together. A lot of families won't take a person with dementia out for lunch because of either the cost or maybe they're embarrassed. Mm-hmm. But we all walk over to a local restaurant and have a nice meal.
Wonderful.
And linger and talk and share ideas. And the peer support is so important, and the socialization. One thing about our program that the rec therapists instill are the domains of wellness: emotional, physical, intellectual, spiritual, social. Mm-hmm. And then in the afternoon, they might go for a walk by the river or hop on the bus and go to a museum. And then we head back to the JCC, and most days we have live music. We have about 30 volunteers that come in. They cycle through and play live music, and usually a dance party erupts, and it's so much fun.
Fun.
And yes.
I want to join.
Well, you should come check us out one day.
Yeah.
And it's so much fun to see their faces light up when the music starts. And you know how important music therapy is for people with dementia. Mm-hmm. And then they head home, and care partners had a full day to themselves or to work. And they often say our loved ones slept better, they ate better, they're in a better mood. And it's just been such a wonderful journey. And I think the best part about it is just that there wasn't a community before, and we're slowly but surely building this community so that care partners have someone to say, wow, brain disease, what does that look like? How is this going to affect my kids? And mm-hmm. and we swap tips, and who's the best doctor, and how do you get home care? So mm-hmm. that part of the community is very important for the care partners. The peer support is important for the participants, and even the younger children. We're trying to get some more resources for the younger kids, because a lot mm-hmm. of these families are young. They're under 65, mm-hmm. and they have younger children. One other thing that really hits home for me as a care partner is when your loved one is diagnosed with dementia, all of a sudden you're the sole breadwinner. Mm-hmm. And for me, that was tough because I hadn't been working, and things are expensive these days. And it's hard to wrap your head around, how are we going to make this happen? How are we going to mm-hmm. survive? And of course, by talking to your peers, you do find results. You do find mm-hmm. answers.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask, on a personal level, what was it like with your husband, John, and his work and his diagnosis? How did that all play out?
When it all came down, a friend of mine said, have John call in sick, because he might just end up getting fired for not performing well. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to find out what was going on first before he talked to his boss, because he was in an industry where he needed to have full attention. Mm-hmm. So he called in sick, and we've never heard from anybody at his work.
Really?
And really, truly. And he's been on disability until just this month when he turned 65.
Okay. So that could have gone better, I guess, right?
I think so.
I think that part of things is on very much like young onset, it workplace dementia in the workplace is really, it hasn't been carved out yet, has it? Especially from a human resources perspective, I would imagine.
Yes. So, I think people are scared to bring it up at work, not only having dementia, but caring for someone with dementia. I was even interviewed I had a job interview recently, and the interviewer said, so how do we know you're going to do a good job if your husband declines? I know that's an illegal question, and I was a fool
it
to
is.
answer. But yes, it's a thing.
Wow. How did that feel when they asked you that?
Oh, I felt sick to my stomach.
Yeah, I can
I thought,
imagine.
really? Is this where we are now? It's 2023, mister. So
Yeah, that's surprising. That's disappointing.
Very.
You know, your story is very inspiring, and creating UQuest, there's so many things I want to ask you about it, and we'll get to that. But I do want to ask more about what it was like as a couple for the diagnosis. And I don't mean to get too personal, Cindy, if you're comfortable talking about it, but what is that like in a marriage when you encounter something like this?
Well, I was very fortunate in many ways because John's decline has been very slow. Oftentimes, especially with frontal temporal dementia, a younger person, the decline can be very quick.
Mm-hmm.
But we're in year 16 or something, so it has given us a chance to get used to all this.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is that John is a very considerate person. And like I said, he was always looking out for the care partner. So he made it kind of his daily goal to help out around the house, help
mm-hmm.
me as much as he could, help with the kids. And he still does that. He still tries to help, even though he can't make dinner anymore. He'll pick up some dim sum and reheat it. He calls it heat and eat or something. So he still wants to try to help, and that's been wonderful. And then there were times when I've just been so down, and he has just a sunny attitude, and somehow he cheers me up. And he's really
wonderful.
Good with that way. Yeah.
And when you started your charity, UQuest, and the day programs and the support for care partners, I'm sure you've met a lot of people that have experienced this, and you've seen how their marriages are affected, or how their careers are affected, or how their children are affected. Can you talk a little bit about what that's like?
It's very sad when the children are affected. I've heard of a family that had 4 or 5 kids ranging in age from like 8 to 18. And you hear things like attempted suicide, stealing, skipping school, because the kids are just devastated. They know their dad or mom is going to pass before too long. And how do you even explain it? I mean, the best explanation anyone gave our kids was a social worker who said, your dad's not stupid. His brain is like a series of rivers and bridges, and one of the bridges collapsed and the water can't get through. I mean, that really, there's not much you can say to a kid. So that part, when I heard about the kids, that really hit home and made me feel sad. Other partners have just given up work and they stay home. I can't do that. I need to work for another 100 years. And I think that it's tough for the care partner to stay home because it's the stress of caregiving, plus you don't have the income, plus you don't have your social network of people at the office and maybe your friends. So
absolutely.
it's been tough on people's family lives for sure. And luckily there are places like Caregivers Alberta or Alzheimer's Alberta or Calgary where they can get some support and resources. And so those are really valuable.
And I think just even spreading the word like we are today really helps, because a lot of people may not even know about UQuest or the services we provide, the free services and programs we provide here at Alzheimer's Society of Alberta and Northwest Territories. What does that look like for you in terms of getting the word out? Or are you at capacity right now? Like, maybe getting the word out you can't really do right now because you've got as much as you can handle.
Well, we do want to grow. But we need funding to grow, and we can't get funding to grow until people say, well, maybe you need to grow because you only have 25 people. So we're in a bit of a pickle there. But we would still like to concentrate on the 25 people that we do support and those 25 families. I always say, well, one person has the dementia, but the 12 or 20 people are in their lives that are also affected. So we've taken brochures up to the NeuroCog clinic at both north and south locations in Calgary. And we also have the ad that runs continuously through the waiting room monitors.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we've talked to many doctors, and we're trying to get more of the PCNs involved and understanding what we do. And
our listeners, that means PCN is primary care network.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. We've done some interviews on TV. John was just in a Alberta Health Services a video and interview with his disc golf, and that's kind of an interesting story. So we try to spread the word every day. Everyone we talk to, we try to talk about it.
That's great. Mm-hmm. What do you find you're surprised by when you started running UQuest in this program? What are you surprised about?
I think I'm surprised at how much work it takes just for what we're doing. It's not like it's a big complex corporation, but there are so many pieces involved. We have quite a bit of staff, and our rec therapists, as I mentioned, are wonderful, and they're busy making sure that all the families are up to speed and they know what things to bring each day. And then we have to get the transportation and the restaurants and the activities planned out. Mm-hmm. And then it rains or it snows or mm-hmm. COVID happens. And so they're very good at pivoting. Mm-hmm. And so I think that part, I didn't realize how much would be involved. And then with the board, we have fundraising that we always have to do. And you worry, are the people going to show up? And if they don't show up, what's plan B? And then all of the governance and the administrative, is like we need to pay $7,000 to have a financial review. It's not even an audit. I know. I thought, we could use that for so many other things, but we have to do everything on the up and up, of course. Mm-hmm. And we end up having to pay for things like that.
Yeah.
So I think those were the things that I hadn't thought about when we first started. I figured everyone would show up, we'd play basketball, we'd go for a walk by the river and have lunch, and that'd be it.
So, there's a lot more, as it turns out.
I've learned a lot. Yeah, I've learned a lot.
We mentioned that it's Recreational Therapy Month, and recognizing the efforts of recreational therapists. Can you tell our listeners what they do at UQuest and how important their work is?
I'd love to, and I hope I can do them justice. I do know that when we get a phone call, an inquiry from a family, our executive director actually takes the basic information and sets up an interview with the rec therapist. And they meet with the family in the home and try to get to know them as well as they can. So the rec therapist will meet the family in the home. And I know they have a lot of kind of template questions they ask just to make sure that the potential participant is a good fit, or we're a good fit for the participant, actually. Mm-hmm. And they ask a lot of things about their background and their abilities, and also what kind of things do you like to do and what things don't you want to do? Mm-hmm. And that way it helps tailor the day. We just want to make sure that the potential participant is going to enjoy themselves. And a lot of times, well, I shouldn't say a lot, many times it's hard for a participant to come that first day. And even for the care partner, it's hard to give them up that first day. But more often than not, everything always works out. And, you know, after a couple of visits to UQuest, they're just like everyone else and happy to be there.
That's great. What would you say to someone who might not be aware of young onset dementia, who may not understand what care partners, what it requires of a care partner, how it affects someone in the workplace with their career, not only for the person that's living with dementia, but the care partner? Mm. What would you say to them?
Well, one thing that comes to mind is a researcher named Padma. I knew her a few years ago from Alzheimer's Calgary. And she said, if you have a brain, you're at risk for getting dementia. So I think that's one thing that people don't realize. They think that it's an old person's disease. But we're seeing it in 30, 40-year-olds. I would also say that the younger families don't have the opportunity to make a big nest egg. Because if you're diagnosed in your late 40s or early 50s, you're still the height of your career. You still have your kids going to university and soccer and hockey and trips. And you have to also be preparing your nest egg, and sometimes that gets tossed to the side.
Mm-hmm.
And I would also say that it's not very supportive at the workplace because people have a fear of dementia. Dementia in the workplace is a hard thing to wrap your head around when you think of a person going to their boss and saying, I need to have my work plan modified because my brain isn't working as it used to. And you think of the employer thinking, well, you know, you're only 50. What's the deal? Are you drinking? Are you doing drugs? And then same with the colleagues. Why would they want to take on extra work? What happens if the person with dementia doesn't show up anymore? Or what happens if the person with dementia messes up a presentation or can't do spreadsheets anymore? So I think it's a human trait. We're worried about ourselves first and our survival, and work is part of survival. Mm-hmm. So it's been tough. Like I said, John left work, but the others that are struggling through work, I think it must be one of the hardest things a person could do.
Mm-hmm. And young onset dementia is predicted and projected in the next 30 years to go through the roof. It is really going to be a big part of some of the health concerns within Alberta and throughout Canada. We know this from our recent study that we've just released, the Landmark Study 2, which mm-hmm. is the many faces of dementia in Canada. And so it is something that people are going to be encountering, even if they're not experiencing it firsthand. So what do you think is the solution to perhaps creating more awareness, perhaps fighting some of the stigma attached with it, so people that are diagnosed with young onset can perhaps have a better experience than your husband did with his work?
I think if people go back to what Padma said about having a brain, you can get dementia. I think if they see that it's a disease, just like a heart disease or a liver disease, that your brain is letting you down, something's wrong and it's degenerating. You're not crazy. It's just that parts of your brain aren't functioning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I also think that if people could realize that someone like John, who's been living with this for 16 years, can still function and still be a valuable member of society, and he's not hurting anybody, I think that that would go a long way to help people understand that it's not something to be shunned.
Right, right. That would be good. You mentioned that John's dementia has not progressed as fast as it normally would be expected to, that he's been living with it for about 16 years. What are some of the steps that you think you've taken health-wise with John to perhaps slow the progression of the disease?
Well, unfortunately, he hasn't given up sugar. And I hear that sugar is a big
That's
no-no.
A hard one.
Yes. People have been saying try the Mediterranean diet. So we've done quite a bit of that. A lot of the nice olive oils and garlics and chicken and lemon and all those yummy things. Mm-hmm. We're not great at that. A lot of time we'll just eat like everyone else. But he has been so good about getting outside every day. Every day since COVID, he's been disc golfing. And right. I think that goes a long way to help with his circulation and his motivation and just all over well-being.
Mm.
We've also tried to be honest about the disease. He's not sequestered in the basement watching Star Trek. He's out there sharing information about it. Mm-hmm. Right now, there's a music initiative that UQuest has been involved with AHS. And they're playing live music at the South Health campus. And John is like the host or the moderator.
Oh, great.
Yes. And he goes out there and he schmoozes, as he calls it. He schmoozes with everyone and everyone has a good time just listening to the music. So I think by keeping as many normal activities in his life, I think that's really helped.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's probably helped a lot more than the Mediterranean diet at this point.
And was John naturally a very social person before the diagnosis?
Yes, yes, very much so. Mm-hmm. He could talk to anybody.
Because I know that isolation is an issue. Mm-hmm. It is an issue, and it's one of the things that we talk about reducing the risk of dementia is maintaining social life, stretching that muscle of having conversations and meeting new people and interacting. And of course, the exercise piece, you were mentioning that he's been out with his disc golf, it sounds like every day since COVID, which is awesome. Right. But I do feel for the people that aren't, maybe they're a little bit less social and they are an introvert. What would you say to those people just as advice?
Well, I'm thinking that if you're an introvert and you didn't really want to get out to talk, there are ways to stay home and talk with peer support online. There aren't many. John's involved with Dementia Alliance International, and everyone in the group has dementia, and they talk about whatever comes up. And John was saying that he'd like to get more of those peer support groups going. And I think that I'm not really sure what to say about someone that is feeling a little more isolated. Mm. One step at a time, I think. Mm-hmm. Try a new hobby. Try a walking group, maybe. Something where you can be with people, but you don't have to be, you know, in their face.
Well, you were saying that it's a tough step sometimes, that first support group meeting at UQuest. And once they get over that, or they get in there and they see what it's like to see that they're not alone and that there's lots of people like them, that it sort of, it gets the ball rolling. So I can imagine that would probably help someone who's an introvert.
Very much so. And our rec therapists would take that into consideration. They would gradually bring them in and make sure that they feel welcome. That is one of our values, is to be a welcoming place where you belong.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Yes. I'd like to shift the conversation by saying congratulations, Cindy, because you are the award winner for the Roger Marple Volunteer Award for 2023. Congratulations. And we're honored to have you as our first recipient.
Well, thank you so much. I'm really touched by it.
So for those that are listening that maybe aren't familiar with this new award, it's the Roger Marple Volunteer Award. And we've talked about Roger Marple a lot. He was someone who was an advocate for our society and someone that was living with dementia. He served on our board. He was he worked with other people living with dementia internationally. And he was just a wonderful example of a volunteer that obviously we found incredibly valuable. And so the person who receives this is a volunteer who exemplifies the qualities and efforts that Roger embodied in his daily life and his work and on the behalf of the Alzheimer's Society and those living with dementia. So I just wanted to say congratulations, and it's well deserved.
Well, thank you so much. That's very kind of you. And I'm very thankful to receive this, especially since it has Roger's name on it, because he was amazing.
And so you knew Roger?
I did know Roger. I was going to the big dementia conference in Ottawa a few years ago, and I saw him at the airport, and he saw me, and we looked at each other and we said, "You look familiar," but we didn't know each other then. And then we clued in. And we ended up taking a cab from the airport to our hotel, and then we tootled around Parliament Hill and took photos and just became instant friends because we had so much in common. Uh-huh. And he was so generous and such a kind man, and he introduced me around to all the people that he knew, and I didn't know very many people there. Mm-hmm. And he pointed me in the direction of CABI, the Center for Aging and Brain Health Innovation, who ended up funding our pilot project for UQuest. So,
oh, that's great.
Yes, we'll always be indebted for that, and just always so fond of Roger. We really miss him.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. And volunteering. I would like to talk about that. So I think volunteering really is something that we don't talk about enough, as something that can be given in kind as a way to support the community of those living with dementia and our society. Can you talk a little bit about what it means to you to be a volunteer?
I grew up in a family, as John did, where it was expected to volunteer. You shared your time, you shared your money, you share your insight. It was just a given. We didn't really think about it. I believe that I'm volunteering with UQuest because it's a way for me to help get rid of the anxiety and the depression and the sadness of the brain disease. And when I can help other people, it just feels like the right thing to do. I see care partners who are new to the program and they're just new to this so-called dementia journey. And I remember how awful it felt to look at your loved one and say, we're not going to be growing old together. How are we going to get through this? And just that feeling in the pit of your stomach. So when I can talk to someone even for a couple minutes and say, welcome. And, you know, if you need any questions answered or if I can help you, just let me know. I don't know what it is about that kind of giving that just it really helps a person emotionally.
Mm-hmm. So it is like a two-way street almost.
I think it is. I think it is. Mm-hmm. I'm getting a lot out of it.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what would you like for the future, both for people that are diagnosed with young onset and living with dementia and for their care partners? What would you like to see happen?
Well, I would like to see a whole bunch of funding come, and we could open up a UQuest in the four quadrants of every city in Alberta and Western Canada and across the country, because, as you said, it's on the rise. We're not ready for it. We don't have the supports, and people don't understand it. So that would be my dream.
That's a good dream. I like that. Cindy, is there anything else you'd like to add before we sign off?
I think that if you see a person, no matter what their age, if they're struggling with their words or struggling trying to pay a bill at the grocery store or sitting staring into space on a picnic bench, give them a break. Just say hello and see if they're doing okay and if you can help them. I'm not trying to save the world or anything, but just a few people who might need an extra hand. We're not crazy. We're care partners and we're stressed and the people with dementia are stressed, and it'd be nice to just have a little bit of leeway there.
Mm-hmm. Well said, Cindy.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much for being on the show. I really enjoyed this conversation, and I hope we meet again soon.
I hope so as well, and I really enjoyed it and appreciate the opportunity to spread the word about young onset dementia and UQuest.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Cognitive Connections, Conversations on Dementia with the Alzheimer's Society of Alberta and Northwest Territories. If you're looking for additional resources, support, or more information on dementia, head over to our website at alzheimer.ab.ca. Here you'll find a wealth of resources, support, programs, and more. We encourage you to share this podcast with anyone who may benefit from these conversations and leave us a review. Join us again next time as we continue to explore the multifaceted aspects of dementia with our insightful guests. Until then, take care, stay connected, and remember that every conversation counts in the realm of cognitive connections.